26 years ago, I was a college student majoring in astronomy. It was the summer of my senior year at Boston University. I had just started a new part-time job in the planetarium at the Boston Museum of Science. Not long after I started working at the museum, a group of blind students stood in line for one of my planetarium shows. I was nervous, and I asked the planetarium manager what I should do. "Just help them to their seats. That's all you have to do," he said. So I helped the students to their seat and welcomed everyone to the planetarium, and I pressed the button to start the show. It was a pre-recorded show, so I sat in the console, and at the end of the show, I got back on the microphone, and I thanked everyone for visiting the planetarium. If you've heard my story before, you know what happened next. The audience walked past the console toward the exit, and I wondered what these blind students thought of the planetarium, so I walked around the booth and asked them. And they told me bluntly, the show stunk, and they walked away. Well, that moment in time changed my life. I vowed to make astronomy accessible. I didn't know how to do this, but I was determined to figure it out. Over the years, I've created tactile astronomy images to accompany all of the planetarium shows and wrote several accessible astronomy books. Touch the Stars, Touch the Universe, Touch the Sun, the Little Moon Phase book, Touch the Invisible Sky. I designed the tactile graphics for the Solar System Radio Explorer exhibit at the NASA Goddard Space Flight Visitor Center, the tactile Carina poster for the Space Telescope Institute, and tactile maps for the new NASA Touch the Earth book. To help other educators, I learned how to make the programs and facilities more accessible. I established my own consulting company called You Can Do Astronomy. I am sighted, and I became a member of the National Federation of the Blind in 2003 when Barbara Cheadle asked me to come and present a couple of accessible astronomy sessions for students at the National Convention in Louisville. Since then, I've been here at the National Convention presenting astronomy programs and participating in a variety of workshops. You'll find me with the folks from Connecticut. Beyond the conventions, I've been an astronomy instructor for two Circle of Life academies and one junior science academy and two high school youth slams. I've worked with students who are blind or have low vision. Whether they explore tactile star patterns, modeled the seasons and moon phases, measured craters, imaged telescopic views of the night sky by touch, or any of the other many astronomy activities, these students fully participated in each experience without barriers. Last summer, the Slammin' in Space class at the Youth Slam went on a moon mission at the Maryland Challenger Center. If you're not familiar with the Challenger Centers, these are teaching facilities sponsored by the spouses of the astronauts who died aboard the Challenger space shuttle in 1986. Each Challenger Center has a very realistic mission control room with specific stations for crew that includes navigation, life support, science, engineering, communications, data, and medicine. A nearby room is a reproduction of the interior of a space laboratory station with work areas for the mission control counterparts. So the navigator in mission control communicates by radio with the navigator in the space station. The engineer in mission control communicates with the engineer in the space station, and so on. And the students must rely on each other to accomplish the mission. About a week before the students arrived for the Youth Slam, I traveled to the Maryland Challenger Center with Mary Jo Hartle and my co-instructor, Ben Wentworth. I took photos and made careful notes of the exact requirements for each crew station. For example, the navigation stations and mission control and on the space station required the crew to view images on a computer to decide which method was the best to achieve orbit. The engineering crew in the space station needed to build a probe from a visual graphic display, as the engineer in mission control described which components to connect first. The medical crew on the space station had to monitor the space station crew health by taking their vital signs, while other crew members needed to complete a visual chemical test to check the cleanliness of the space station water and classify the geology of lunar samples. No problem. I created tactile diagrams, 3D models. attached Braille labels, substituted talking medical and chemical instruments. There wasn't much that could not be made accessible. Steve Booth and staff at NFB headquarters produced Braille versions of the crew manifest. And what do you think happened on the day of the mission? The students went to their assigned stations, communicated with each other, conducted experiments, corrected an oxygen emergency leak, and successfully landed on the moon. And it was great. As we left the Challenger Center and headed back to campus, we talked with the students and asked them what they thought of the moon mission, and they said it was one of the most exciting things they had ever done. See, I never understand why people assume that students who have low vision or are blind cannot be just as successful as their sighted counterparts, because that assumption is just not true. Is it possible for a blind person to become an astronomer or astronaut? Of course. And I think the first blind astronauts might be right here. In fact, I know of two good candidates, students Terry Garrett from Colorado and Chelsea Cook from Virginia. Going back to my story about my experience at the Museum of Science, while I developed astronomy tactile images, I started to think of other ways to make the planetarium more accessible. With grant funding, we were able to install an assistive listening system with volume amplification for people who are hard of hearing and a modular captioning system for deaf visitors. The captioning system, it turns out, was often requested by visitors who spoke English as a second language. They had no problem hearing, but told me it was easier to understand English by reading than by listening. I was also able to relocate wheelchair accessible seating from one area to several areas within the planetarium. This allowed people to sit with their friends rather than requiring everyone in a wheelchair to be herded together like cattle. Yeah. I live in New Britain, Connecticut, and I'm an active member of the NFB Central Connecticut chapter. We meet once a month at the Plainville Library. Recently, I borrowed a library book called Accessible Connecticut, which details accessibility resources at many Connecticut museums. I found that most children and many science museums offered hands-on activities, but accessibility was extremely limited at art and history museums. I found that out of 37 museums in Connecticut, 20 were described in the book as not being very accessible to a person who is blind, while the other 17 museums had some accessible hands-on components. However, these 17 museums often required advance notice of a week or more that a blind person would be visiting, with the idea that staff could gather some hands-on materials. Any deaf visitor would require an interpreter. Those people needed to give 2 weeks' notice. And I have to wonder why. Why must a person with a visual or hearing impairment not have the same access to a museum at any time like a person with full vision and hearing? Not only does this not seem fair to me, I find it personally outrageous. Making a museum accessible is good for all visitors. For example, many sighted people have different learning styles and do best with tactile materials. And accessibility also helps the museum's bottom line with higher attendance. I think it takes more effort to make excuses why museums and classes can't be made accessible than to simply make them accessible. I no longer work at the Boston Museum of Science, but I have to tell you about the very last planetarium show I gave. It was Christmas Eve Day 2009, just last year, and as usual, I was taking tickets for the planetarium show. Visitors handed me their tickets, and I ripped off a portion and handed them back the ticket stub. A mother and her husband and children approached the planetarium, and she handed me their tickets. When I handed her back the ticket stubs, she said, "Thank you," in a way that sounded to me like she was deaf. Without thinking, I said, "We have captioning for this program." And she replied, "You have captioning? We need captioning." and a few minutes later, I had the captioning system set up in their seats. So I stepped in the console and welcomed everyone to the planetarium and pressed the button to start the pre-recorded holiday program. During the show, I noticed the dim flicker of the captioning display and the silhouette of the family reading the illuminated text. After the show, the audience walked past the console toward the exit. As the family approached, I walked around the booth to ask them how they liked the planetarium show. They smiled, and the mother joyfully said, "What a wonderful thing. Captions in the planetarium. We'll be back." And as they walked away, I could not help thinking how a planetarium or any museum could transform from an inaccessible place to a destination that could be enjoyed by all visitors anytime, without advance notice, and regardless of visual, hearing, or physical abilities. And I still wonder, why can't every classroom and museum be an accessible and welcoming place for all? Because I know it is possible. Thank you.